Blog Talk Radio.
Yeah.
I would like to welcome everyone to John Talk Radio tonight. This is our off-the-record show. Our special guest tonight is Terry Draper. Terry is known, probably best known for his being a member of Clat 2 and co-authoring the song Calling Occupants of Interplanetary Craft. But Terry has a great solo career going, and tonight we're talking about his latest release, which is called Searching, and you heard the title song from that. Terry, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, John. It's a delight.
It's really great to have you on. We talked a little bit off mic about, we're just starting to talk about the present condition of the music scene today in the music industry and what's going on. And I think that, you know, when I hear music, Terry, and I've been listening to music a long time and been doing this show since 2008, so I get quite a few songs sent to me. But I always love that heartfelt music that I know is coming from somebody's heart and from somebody's soul, and it means something. And I really highly recommend this album because that's what I get out of that. And I just want people to know that when you're going to hear some of this music tonight, but you're also going to hear Terry talk about it and talk about his songwriting and how that this means something to you. And I know that music isn't just something to do, but this is a part of your life. And Terry, if you could start off tonight, what I'd like to do is, if you could give us a little bit of history of Terry Draper, where you were born and what was like growing up, and how music had a part in your life.
Okay, well let's rewind the clock. Let's go way back. As a matter of fact, we better get in the time machine, John, because we're going to go back to the 50s when I was born. Some of my earliest memories were sharing a bedroom, bunk beds, in fact, with my uncle when we lived with my grandma. And he was only 10 years my senior. And we would come home from school, and I was 5 or 6 years old, and he was 15 or 16. And he would regale me with his collection of 78s.
Wow.
So at a very early age, I was listening to Buddy Holly, the Everly Brothers, Elvis, and my favorite, the man who, in my opinion, invented rock and roll, Richard Penniman, best known as Little Richard.
Right.
And so I gravitated to music because of that. And then I started collecting records as I got a little older. I had all the Bobbies, Bobby Rydell, Bobby Vinton, Bobby Curtola. There was a lot of Bobbies in the early 60s, along with the Beach Boys and
yep.
And all the girl groups that Phil Spector was doing, the Ronettes and the Crystals was my favorite. He's a Rebel. And then this band from England came along, and I was totally spangled when they did the Ed Sullivan Show and decided that instead of just listening to music, perhaps I could make some.
Right.
And so I became a drummer. For some reason, maybe it was the tribalness, the primal nature of drums resonated and hit a chord with me. I'm not quite certain why this is. But then I did that for a few years and formed some bands and played with some friends and eventually taught myself to play guitar and piano. Somewhere along the line, we formed a band called Clatu. The precursor to that was John and Dee and I were in a band called Mud Cow with another fellow doing original songs, some of which appeared on Clatu Records later on. But that band dissolved. We tried to do all originals, and we couldn't make a living. We ended up learning Proud Mary, Jumpin' Jack Flash, and Hold Your Head Up by Argent, which is a very cool song, in
yep.
order to get gigs and play the bars and eke out an existence in the music business. But what happened eventually, the Clatu story to some degree, John, we recorded that first album over 3 years, released it in 1976, and then in February, March of 1977, this journalist wrote an article proving somewhat conclusively that we were the Beatles reincarnate. Not did we just sound like them, we in fact were them. And
right.
that got a little silly. And then we continued making records. We made 5 records, Clatu did altogether, each one selling successively less than its predecessor. finally in 1982 we put out our 1981 we put out our last album, and were forced to tour it, which was a lot of fun. It was fun to go out and actually play and meet the people that had been buying our records and whatnot. But it was an untenable situation, and that was our swan song, and we threw in the towel, if I can use a sports metaphor, a boxing metaphor, in fact.
Yep.
So here I'm getting up near the present time. So what happened in 1982 when Klaatu dissolved was that the music business had effectively discarded us and would not allow us to make a living in this business. And that was a double-edged sword for all of us, of course, as you can well imagine. But for me, it was okay because I met my wife, we got married, we built a house, we had children. A lot of these things you don't do when you're playing in a band on the road.
Right.
So that was fortuitous indeed. And it also allowed me, I continued to make music, write, and record, and it also allowed me to do whatever I damn well please, John. So if I'm feeling like invoking the Moody Blues a la Searching, the song we just heard, or I feel like doing a Frank Sinatra number, which is, somewhere where that song Monogamous Me on the new album leads us, I have that pleasure. I'm not restricted or confined by the business.
You know, that's a great point. I mean, we could talk about the music industry forever. And what's really great, Terry, is that not only, you know, your opinion is wrapped around experience and what you guys experience and what you actually, you know, you can tell stories that that are true to what happened to you with Klaatu. And what, you know, what advice would you give somebody, Terry? And I'm sure that this happens to you quite a bit when people are trying to make it in the industry or trying to make it in the music industry, or they're just trying to fulfill, you know, what they feel is their destiny of making music. What is some of the advice you would give some of the younger groups starting out?
I hate to be negative, John, but I would in this day and age, I would have to advise against going into the music business. Keep it to yourself, love it, play it for other people. But do it for yourself, do it from the heart. Don't try to make a career out of it. If you must make a career out of it, I wish you all the best. Keep your head up and keep it from the heart. That's the only way it's going to work. I mean, I have some gold records. I had some nominal success in the music business, and I also had a roofing business for 20 years.
When you look back...
Yeah,
I was just thinking about that because you look back at that and you look back at your career and your Klaatu's music is like, it will live on. I mean, there's something about the music, Terry, and I'm sure you know this more than me because of the fans that the band has and the cult following that the band has, but the music will live on. And even though like Capitol Records or whoever it was didn't agree with maybe some of the direction the band was taking, which is always interesting to me. It's like, where would they be without the artist? You know, it's like nowhere, but they seem to always kind of try to intimidate the artist. But when you look back at that, you know, I can imagine that it was, and I can feel that in the first, you know, recordings, that you guys did what you wanted to do. And I want to just dovetail into real quick before I forget it. When you were talking, Terry, about your early life and you were listening to different kinds of music, and then you heard, just like me and a lot of people, Terry, how that the Beatles came on and kind of changed everything. Not only were they interesting to you, not only did they feed you like intellectually and musically that you thought, wow, that's really something, but they inspired you to be a musician yourself. Why do you think that was?
I'm not sure. I really, it was just so powerful. It was overwhelming. And I mean, I had records, I'd listened to 45s, I had the Phil Spector stuff, and I loved the Righteous Brothers, and I had all the Beach Boys 45s. But when the Beatles came along, it was just overwhelming. It was like this giant monsoon, like not a monsoon, a tsunami is what it was, a musical tsunami from Britain. And I became a big Rolling Stones fan, and I loved the Animals, and it was just like I would really like to be involved in this. I would like to do this. Up until that point, I wanted to be an archaeologist, you know. I wanted nothing more than to be Howard Carter and dig around some desert and find some dusty tomb. I thought that would be an exciting way to live. And the Beatles changed my mind on that. It really was the Beatles more than anything. And it got me to play music, not just listen to it. And one thing led to another, and it spiraled out of control. I was playing drums in a rhythm and blues band, and I went to see Led Zeppelin. And they were unknown, didn't have a record out. They were playing at the Rock Pile here in Toronto. And someone from England had told me about these two bands that were catching fire in England. One was called Led Zeppelin. The other one was called Jethro Tull. And if you hear of them or see their records, make a point of checking it out. And so I went to see Led Zeppelin that night, not expecting too much of anything. And they totally blew my mind. It was like, okay, this playing drums is fun and everything, but I really need to learn how to express myself and make music and understand how it all works, you know. It's like learning how to write a book, you know, the punctuation and the grammar and the present tense and the past tense and the mood and how you use the adverb, all of that stuff, metaphors, and all of those things. It's making music is the same. But you have to learn how to use all these tools and when to use a minor chord and stuff like that, you know, for an obvious example. But that's what I wanted to do, and I've spent most of my time in life doing that, learning how to craft songs and music and make moods for people. A lot of times when I'm recording, I'm not trying to record a song with guitar, bass, and drums. I'm trying to create what I call an audioscape. An audioscape is a landscape for your ears. And I want you to come with me on this journey, and I want you to know what I'm singing about and the topic just by listening to the music I'm doing. Never mind the words. The words are going to help, obviously. But that's my goal, is to create what I call audioscapes.
Now through your growth as a musician when you were young, and let's go back, you when you heard the Beatles, Terry, and then you thought, you know, I've got to do this, and it was like this thing within you. Did you feel that music gave you confidence and gave you that strength? Because a lot of people I've talked to, Terry, that's what happened. It was like, you know, there's certain ways in life to go, and you mentioned you like the band The Animals, and I tell this story to my kids sometimes. I remember being in like the fourth or fifth grade, or what, maybe it was the sixth grade. It was back then. It had to be like sixth or seventh grade, and The Animals were out, House of the Rising Sun was out. I just thought that was the coolest song ever, and I remember sitting in my classroom, looking out the window and dreaming I was in The Animals, and that's all I could think about, was like, I wanted to be in The Animals. And the weird part of that is the teacher was looking at me, asking me a question that had nothing to do with The Animals, so I like came back to earth, and I can remember thinking, Terry, I had no clue what she was talking about. I had gone off to this world where I wanted to be, you know, with Eric Burdon. I wanted to be with Alan Price. I wanted to be with these guys. And I think that's very interesting to me. You know, rock history means a lot because it sculpted a lot of us. I mean, it directed a lot of us. I mean, what would some people have done without that? And I think it's real important for, you know, to get that from you, where not only – and this is pretty awesome, but not only did you think the Beatles were like the coolest thing ever, but you were in a band that was good enough technically and spiritually and in all ways of music that people thought it was the Beatles. Now, I know that there's, you know, this side and that side of that controversy, but a lot of bands couldn't even been considered for that. You know what I mean? It's got to be a pretty good... I would think it would be a pretty good honor to be say that your music could be the music of the Beatles. Do you agree with that?
Well, yeah. I mean, for me, I tell people all the time that to be likened unto the Beatles, and people say you sound like the Beatles, that's a compliment of the highest order. For people to think that we actually were the Beatles, That's that same compliment a hundredfold.
Yep.
Yeah, and you know what, we talked about the animals and you were daydreaming. We were so enamored with the animals, me and my friends at the time, that we actually had a band back in about 1965, and we called ourselves the Trax, T-R-A-X, after the Greatest Hits Animals record here in Canada.
Oh, okay.
Called Animal Trax.
Yeah.
And we played only animal songs. I think we were the first clone band in the world, John.
Oh, that's awesome.
I kid you not. We played everything. Bury My Body, Boom Boom, It's My Life, Don't Let Me Be Misunderstood, We Gotta Get Out of This Place, House of the Rising Sun, of course. And on, the list goes on. But not only did I want to play music, and the Beatles inspired me to do that, all of those British bands did, There was also the added bonus about getting some self-esteem from being in a band and hanging out with guys with similar ideas as yours and similar musical tastes. And we also got to meet a lot of chicks.
That's really true. People will think
it totally
that
is true.
It's one of those things. It's like, you know, me and my buddies went. We live outside of Columbus, Ohio, and this is so weird. We would take the Greyhound bus into Columbus, and we all bought Beetle boots. And we put those Beetle boots on, Terry, and we thought we were the Beatles. And we were like, we were the coolest people in the world at that point, because
sorry, John. I saved up my allowance for weeks to get a pair of Beetle boots. That was a big step.
Yeah, and they weren't easy to find around here, so that made it a little harder. And it was like, you know, wow, you know, we were, you know, living in a pretty rural area, and thinking that, you know, no matter what the temperature was or what we were doing, we had on our Beetle boots, which is pretty funny.
Yeah,
it's
I
funny.
Actually had a Beetle jacket, one of those collarless jackets. That was like a blue linen color.
Are great.
Almost a denim, like a washed out denim color. Yeah, I wish I had it today. It would probably have some value.
Yeah, that would be pretty cool. Now,
I still have a collection of Beetle cards, John.
Oh,
I collected a whole bunch, and I found them a couple of years ago in a box. and they came with bubble gum. I don't have any of the bubble gum anymore. I chewed that all up, John.
But, you know, those are worth something, and I have some of those myself. I don't have a whole set of those, but it is cool to have that stuff. Now, let's talk gear just a little bit. When you started off with the drums, what kind of set did you have, and what kind of setup like the original one that you had, and then what did you work into when you were with Clat 2 and when you were working, you know, more studio work, and you were able to possibly upgrade your kit?
I wandered around the neighborhood for about a year with just a pair of drumsticks, and I was tapping on anything that came by, the telephone pole, my desk in school, my girlfriend's head. I was just tippity-tappity, all the time. We didn't have a lot of money and could not afford a set of drums. I actually built a set of drums out of cardboard boxes. And needless to say, they didn't last long, because I was not a very gentle drummer. I was more from the John Bonham school of beat the shit out of these things. But eventually, my parents broke down and afforded me a set of Stewarts made in Japan. They were blue sparkle. They didn't have a floor tom-tom, just a three-piece kit. And I was allowed to play them, provided they weren't home. So whenever they went out, luckily they liked to golf and do bowling. So I had some quality time alone to myself. And then when I was 14, I got a summer job. Because I needed a better set of drums. These weren't very good. And my father said, "You going to go to get a job?" And I said, "Yes, Dad." And he said, "Okay, for every dollar you put in the bank, I will match it. And
yeah,
we
cool.
will get you what you're after." And I saved up over $300 that summer at a dollar an hour. And my dad matched it, and I got myself a set of Green Sparkle Ludwig Super Classics.
Oh, wow.
Just like Ringo's kit, only a different color. Don't know why I bought the green sparkle, but John Bonham used green sparkle many years later, and I was quite tickled when I saw that.
Now, do you still have those?
No, I wish. I traded them in for a set of double bass drum Black Onyx Rogers kit, and I don't know why I got two bass drums. I was having a hell of a time just playing the one, but I needed two at the time. It was more of a look, I think, than a musical statement. And then I got rid of those and got a set of Ludwig Mahoganys, and eventually I needed money and sold those off and picked up a used kit of Rogers that I used on both of the first two Klaatu albums.
Oh, wow.
In fact, the Hope album, I was looking for a big tom-tom sound a la Day in the Life by the Beatles from Sgt. Pepper, and I took the heads down to the drummer's place in Toronto. It was called Drummer's Paradise, and I had them make me calfskin heads, just like the old days when they would put it on a wooden hoop and stretch the calf skin out. And so I was looking for that rich sound. And so the Hope album was recorded with a set of 9-ply Maple Rogers and with calf skin heads. And I didn't break them until the album was finished.
Oh, wow. That's good.
They managed to make it through the whole album. But they were a real pain to tune. I mean, they weren't even, because it's a real skin. It was thicker here than there. And so keeping them in tune and sounding decent was a struggle. But
now,
the proof is in the pudding. They sound pretty good on the record.
Yeah, I would say that worked pretty good. One thing that I was going to ask was, what drums are you using today? I mean, what kind of kit do you have today?
I have a set of Milestones. Made in Canada, fiberglass drums. I bought them for the third Klaatu album, Sir Army Suit. We used them on that album. And I still have them to this day. And I play them infrequently, but they still sound pretty good. And on my records, it sounds like real drums, but I have to burst your bubble, John. They're not. All the drums on my recordings are samples.
Yep, and we could talk about that too, because, I mean, you do your own recording, right? Terry, you have your own studio.
Yeah.
And I think that's, something that I couldn't do that. I mean, I know that I could probably get some programs and put things together, but it wouldn't sound right because I don't have the knowledge that you have. So you would be able to do that because of your musical background and things like that. So I respect that. My guest is Terry Draper, and Terry has a brand new album out called Searching. And Terry, I think we'll take a music break and play a song from it. And then we'll come back and we'll talk about the making of the new album. I'd like to play I Would Be King. Would you like to talk a little bit about that? Maybe give us some background on that?
Sure, John. This is a perfect segue. We were talking earlier about becoming a musician versus an archaeologist. I mentioned that I really love history and wanted to be an archaeologist. And this song, I Would Be King, that's what it's about. It's about me being an archaeologist. And the whole gist of the song is I just want to be king for one day. I want to discover Atlantis and be king for a day. I want to open Tutankhamun's tomb like Howard Carter and be king for a day. And that's all. I would really like to be king for a day. And so I mention all of these lost cities like El Dorado and different places, and Atlantis too, of course. Jamie Hoover from the Spongetones did the background vocals on this track with me.
Yes, I have interviewed Jamie before, and that's a great band. That's a really good band.
He's a swell fellow.
Yeah, he is. He's really good to talk to and an incredibly talented guy. So this is Terry Draper's I Would Be King from his latest release, Searching, and we'll be right back with with the rest of the interview with Terry right after this.
Oh, city of Z, ancient Iran. Beneath the sand, the muezzin calls to thee. Hear us, Nilgirga, by Titi Hindi and Andes, Palmyra, the desert bride.
Welcome everyone back to John Talk Radio. My special guest tonight is Terry Draper. You can go on Terry's website, terrydraper.com. His new album, his new solo album is Searching. Terry, where's the best place that people can purchase this album?
Terrydraper.com is the place to go. I think it's up on Amazon too, but if you come right to my site, I'll send it out to you. No problem there. You know what? I'm glad you picked this song, I Would Be King, John, because it's a little off the wall, doesn't really sound like a lot of what's going on in the music business today. I mean, do you think that if I was Taylor Swift, Do you think that Universal Records would have let me record that song?
That's a great point. That's a perfect
You
thing.
Know, and so yeah. I get to do whatever I want to do, and it's right from the heart. It's how I feel. And that particular song, I'm using some Middle Eastern motifs and a recording I found on the internet of an afternoon in Cairo. That's what all of the singing, the muezzin singing, and the cars going by and all of that. So I really want you to come to Cairo with me, and then we're going to go out on the Giza Plateau with shovels in hand and do a little digging and see what we can find. And let's go back a few thousand years in time to a different age. And so I try to replicate it with different instruments that are unfamiliar to me and a musical motif that I don't often dabble in. And what this does is it amuses me. And I can only hope, John, that if I'm amusing myself, that I'm amusing you too.
Yeah, and I think what it does also, Terry, it makes you think. And music today, there's so much music out there that is just kind of, there's a surface to it, and there's absolutely no depth to it. But when you can get into music that takes you into a deeper place, a place of thought, a place of thinking about it, a discussion of the music, the conversation behind the music, I think that's just precious stuff. It's things that I love hearing kids talk about. They'll go, you know, my wife and I have raised five kids, and a lot of them will go right back to the music that I played around them when they were growing up. And I know that they've got all the music, you know, that's out there today. But it makes me feel good, Terry, that they go back and listen to that, you know, and that they find something that has some depth to it and has a little bit of it didn't, it wasn't just created so that they could get a new Learjet, you know, it was something that was deep.
And you know what, John, it's not an accident that they grew up with this music and they heard it from you and that's why they like it. What happened was that you and I grew up during a musical renaissance. What
right.
we went through in the 60s was not unlike what happened in Italy in the 1500s with Michelangelo and Leonardo da Vinci and Raphael and all the great sculptors and painters. That was a real renaissance. Everyone was trying hard to break new ground. Everyone was experimenting. And in the 60s, musically, we were all looking for new sounds and new ways of doing things, and we take the guitar and put it through the organ, the Hammond organ speaker, the Leslie, or, you know, we'd slow things down and use tape effect. Whatever it took, everybody was experimenting. Listen to those early records by Donovan, like Sunshine Superman, Hurdy Gurdy Man. They don't sound anything like anybody else was doing.
Right.
And everybody was trying so hard to be novel and different and interesting, and what it boils down to is that all the musicians were thinking about the music. They weren't just playing it.
Yeah.
And that's how we live through that idyllic era of spectacular music.
I agree 100%. I think that you just said that so perfectly. It just nails it, because it was a time that, you know, I look back at it. And there are days, you know, my knees are aching and I'm like walking around thinking, how old am I? And then I think, man, I'm so glad that I was born in that time. And I was just so just feel so blessed and happy to have that experience, to hear that music. You know, and it was a big deal to hear it, because back then, you know, people now, Terry, you can put in any music you want and listen to it on YouTube or whatever you have streaming. But back then I had to get my transistor radio and wait till the song came on. And it was like, you might wait a while to hear the song you wanted, but it was so special when you heard it. And I think that was a part of it too. And plus the vinyl and the way the vinyl sounded and the, you know, how exciting it was to go to a store and get vinyl and have the album in your hand and have the story there and the beautiful artwork. It's just something that I think is missing, but I think it's coming back a little bit. What do you think about that?
Speaking of beautiful artwork, the song that you opened the show with, Searching, the title track, was the second song that I created from Ted's painting. You've seen, obviously, the cover of my new CD.
Right.
It's another spectacular painting by Ted Jones, who did most of the Clatu covers. John, can you hold the picture up for everyone to see, please?
Yeah, here. I'm holding it up. Yep.
See what I'm talking about? And I stared at this picture for about a year, knowing that Ted was going to let me use it for my new CD coming up. And the first song I wrote was Jules and Me, and that's a song about me and Jules Verne hanging out at the library together because we're good buddies, even though he's 100 years dead. I've read all his books.
Yep.
And so because in the picture there's this fish that looks kind of like a submarine, and I imagined that it was the Nautilus and Captain Nemo was on it. And so I wrote this song called Jules and Me that appears on the new album, but I didn't think it was a good enough title for the album. It was a little misleading. Who's Jules, and what's he got to do with me? What, you know? So I worked on some more music, and then I eventually came up with Searching, and that's what Ted's album cover inspired. And you're right about the album covers. I wish I could do vinyl these days and have his artwork on a 12-inch by 12-inch cover as opposed to 5x5 on a CD. But, I mean, hey, we still got the CD at least. You know, a lot of music is just out there in the ether. It's a download, and that's all there is to it. There is no physical goods whatsoever.
Yeah. What do you think of that? Because that's something I've been in the IT business. I've just recently retired, but you know, I know a little bit about it, but I still, it's like this mystical thing. It's there, but I can't grab it. I can't see it. I like the whole fact of, you know, of going over to my record collection and pulling an album out and getting that sense of what they put together, like you're talking about with Ted, and putting all this work into this picture, and then, you know, that inspiring you or you inspiring the picture. It's just, to me, that's totally missing today.
It is, and it is missing, and it's sad. It is very sad.
Now let's talk
about. What can you do? Sure.
Yeah.
Sorry. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to ask you about your. What's Terry Draper's process for songwriting? I mean, do you remember the first song you wrote, and then currently how do the songs come to you? I mean, there's so many different ways, Terry. When I've interviewed people, you know, I ask them about the songwriting style. Some people will say, well, you know, they sit down and construct it. You know, they sit down and they write the music or they write the lyrics, and that's just the way it is. I've had people tell me, Terry, that the whole song will come into their head. It will just, there it is. And how does it work with you?
All of those processes come to me. There are some songs that just sort of magically appear. The closing track, but for the hidden Easter egg on my new CD, is called Everything Will Be All Right. And I was sitting at the piano on December 8th, 2012. I remember this specifically, because it was the anniversary of the demise of John Lennon, and I was going to perform that night and play a couple of songs with some friends of mine at a benefit, a food drive or something, in honor of Lennon, and I got up and did Nowhere Man with the band. That was great fun, and a couple other songs. Anyway, I was just fiddling at the piano that morning, and 75% of that song, Everything Will Be All Right, popped out in about 20 minutes, lyrics and all.
Wow.
It just sort of appeared, and then I lived with it for a few days, and I tried to rework it and you know, make it more interesting or more complicated, depending on your point of view. And no, I didn't change it. I got it right the first time. It's complex enough to be interesting, and yet it's simple enough that you think you've heard it before, you know? And that's when you know you got one. And so that one came really fast. Other songs, I spend months working on them and piecing them together and writing little bits at a time and reworking the lyric and changing the melody. So it's, and I'm glad it's like that, because it keeps me interested, you know? If all the songs just popped out, it would be boring. You've got to work at it, and you've got to get lucky. And just like life itself.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, I interviewed folks, and there's so many different. I interviewed this guy Terry. It was said he would go into meditation, and he would go into a meditation room and sit there until a song came. And I thought that was wow. Okay, I would probably still be in the meditation room because this, you know, nothing would come. But I'm glad it did for him. There's just
that
so many different ways.
That reminds me of Brian Wilson in the sandbox with his piano.
Yeah.
You must have heard that story.
Yeah. Yeah, that's. I would love to have seen that. I mean, that's a whole different thing when you start talking about Brian Wilson and that. I mean, wow. That's just
Well, no matter how you get there, you know, I find that I often will sit at the piano and or pick up the guitar and write music. And unless I have an idea, I invariably those pieces end up in the wastebasket. I really need to start with the idea, the title, or a lyric. I need to know what I'm talking about so that I can make the music invoke where I'm going, you know?
Yeah.
If we're out at sea and singing about being on the ocean, like one of my songs from a couple albums ago called The Pirates of Port Royal, I did it in 3-4 times, so you get the feel of the boat swaying back and forth. So if you know what you're singing about or what your subject matter is, you can get there more easily musically by knowing in advance, rather than just writing some nice piece of music and then saying, well, what the hell does that sound like? And I got to put some words to this. What does it remind me of? That's too complicated for me. I really like being inspired by an idea, or as the case of Searching and Jules and Me, a fabulous painting by Ted Jones.
Now, talk about with this CD, this album, Searching. You have quite a few people helped you out. Talk about that, Terry, and talk about how that you came to that, to choose these different people to be a part of your album, because that's a pretty delicate thing, because they have to have the right chemistry, because they're representing you and they're representing your music. How did you come up with that, and how did you pick these people?
Well, they're all friends of mine, and that's the first rule. Generally, we make friends and then we make music, and I'm sort of in the driver's seat. I mean, and I get people to do things that I can't. Which makes a lot of sense. Normally, I play everything myself. I write all the violin parts and perform them, not on a violin, of course, or the trombone, but I can do all of the orchestrated stuff. But my friend Brenda Webb, this wonderful singer that I've been working with, we have a band where I play drums and we play live, and it's called An Evening with Adele. And she puts on a foam suit and a red wink and a wig and affects her Cockney accent, and she pretends to be Adele for the evening and talks to the audience and then sings those fabulous songs that Adele does. I think that some of those songs are just wonderful, and the woman has a great voice. I'm not so thrilled with her latest release, but anyway, I digress. So I work with Brenda, and she can sing stuff that I can't. And when we harmonize together, I like the end product. I like the sound of her singing with me. Bill Nadeau is this awesome guitar player, went to my high school. He's a few years my junior, but he lives in the, you know, in the area where I live, and he plays around, and he's just the best guitar player. And he can do it all. If I need Justin Hayward, he's there. If I want Keith Richards, he knows how to do that too. And so he, you know, I construct a lot of the guitar parts and ask him for specifics, because the music I make is very orchestral in nature, where in order for it to work, you have to play this exact part while I play that exact part. We can't just jam like the E Street Band and Bruce Springsteen. We can't just pick up our instruments and fly here. Everything is very orchestrated. So, but Bill can play all those different styles and delivers the goods. Ray Paul, actually. Do you know Ray Paul?
I don't.
You don't? Okay. Ray Paul, he has a band way back in the day, and put out a record called the Charles Beat. And he's almost like the inventor of power pop. He's very much into that whole thing. And he had a record label, Permanent Press Records, and he released the last Klaatu album in the U.S. and the first Terry Draper solo album in the U.S. Wow. And we've been good buddies ever since. And he sings the harmonies with me on Jules and Me. And he sounds very much like me. He called me up. He said, "Is that me on the right or is that you?" When I sent him the CD. And I said, "No, that's you on the right. I'm on the left." And then, of course, I'm doing the lead vocal in the center. And we harmonize that well. Our voices don't just harmonize. They meld together like the Vulcan mind meld, those two voices. And that's pretty cool, working with RP.
Well, that's really awesome to have that, to get the chemistry like that with the different people. But that's one thing about the internet, Terry, is that, you know, you can work with people, you can send them files, they can send you files. And that wouldn't have been possible 20, 30 years ago. So that's a positive thing. What's your take about all that? I mean the technology today in music.
Well, I appreciate the technology. I'm just telling you about the orchestratedness of my music, and I use a lot of instruments like bassoon and strings and harp and timpani drums and whatever is at my beck and call. Well, 30 years ago, I would have had to hire the Toronto Symphony or the Columbus, Ohio Symphony, if you will, to play what I'm hearing in my head.
Right.
And now I have the luxury of doing that in the confines of my own home in my recording studio. I've had a tape recorder since the early 70s, and I've been making recording. I was going to say making records, but that would be a lie. I've been recording for these last almost 50 years, and I'm getting better at it. It's starting to show, you know. There's market improvement on the works I've done lately versus some of the early stuff. And I really appreciate the digital world and the samples and the I use Logic Pro version number 9, I think it is, for recording. And it gives me so much freedom. And you know what? The best part is I don't have to wait for the tape to rewind to play that part again.
Yeah.
That's what I like most.
Yeah, you know, that's, people will think that's crazy, but it really is true. I mean, it was really awesome back in those days, because technology, you don't know, you know, what's in the future. So what you have is the best that you have at that time. But then when it gets, you know, you go like to where we are now and you look back at it, like, you know, you would have to go, like you said, and hire an orchestra and have somebody, you know, with the music and the whole thing. And that's cool too, but it's just like very expensive, and they have to pay all the musicians and all of that. But I just want to say that I really appreciate your music, Terry, and I really appreciate you being on the show tonight. It's been incredibly great and insightful to have you on, and I just want to thank you before I forget it.
Thanks.
And one thing I would like to ask you, is there anything that you could tell the listening audience out there that about Klaatu and about the band and the music that maybe they just don't know? Is there anything that Terry Draper could tell us about the band that maybe people have ignored or people don't know about the band?
Good question. I don't know. One of my favorite things is there's a song called Polizania on the Hope album, and the Hope album is a story that I concocted about a planet that blows itself to pieces out of the asteroid belt in our own solar system, and the sole survivor of that race creates a lighthouse to guide the interstellar traffic through the remnants of his planet. He thinks it's the least he can do. And in the song Polizania, which talks about the aggressiveness of his race, there's a drum break that goes da 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 da. And I created that, and the whole band plays it. And it appears a few times in that song and in other songs on the album. And it's actually a dot, 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 dash, 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 dot, dot, dot. It's SOS.
Wow.
So what we're doing in this album is sending out a subliminal SOS to reinforce the cataclysmic nature of what of the story. And that's just it's very subtle. Nobody probably has figured it out yet without me telling them. But it's one of those things that, it's us going the extra mile to make it that much more interesting. Layers upon layers upon layers, not just musically, but psychologically. And that's what Klaatu was all about. When people ask me how we made those records, I always describe it as as we made the music with our ears, not with our hands. We were listeners before we were musicians. We played what we wanted to hear, not what we wanted to play. If the song was a beautiful ballad that didn't need any drums, well, I didn't play any drums because it didn't need anything. And what we tried to do, and I do this to this day, is to try to maximize each song. Take each song and record it and try to make it sound as much like itself as you possibly can. And Klaatu did that. We have some songs that sound a little Beatly, a whole pile of other songs that sound nothing even remotely close to the Beatles, except there may be guitars, bass, and drums playing,
Right.
And it's that attention to detail. You hear people saying all the time, John, forget about the small shit, don't sweat the small stuff, look at the big picture. Well, I disagree. I say, get out your microscope, deal with every little detail in life, not just music. Yeah. But look at all the details, and if you look at every detail minutely and carefully, the big picture will take care of itself.
Well, Terry, it's been great talking to you. Thank you so much. And we'll have to do this again. And Terry Draper's latest album is Searching, and you can go on terrydraper.com and purchase it there. And Terry, thank you so much. And I just wish you the best, and we'll have to keep in touch.
Thank you, John. When I get another project done, I'll give you a call.
Sounds great. And I want to thank everyone for listening tonight. And everybody have a great evening.
Cheers.
Yeah. let's come together, all together, here we go. And never say never, 'cause that's forever, don't you know?